All right, so it's the morning after the Everton game versus Cardiff. I've got Bretta here. This is Jimmer. And we're just going to do a quick review on the game, what happened before the game, and a few of the after effects and the news that we've heard after the game. So what we'll move into now is the before the game. Any news with transfers?
No, well, I think that it was so far throughout the transfer window, everyone was pretty happy with Martinez having a strong stance on the Fellaini and Bain situation. So first of all, he starts off with, you know, the club releasing the statement for the $28 million bid that they say was insulting, which is good because you know, you don't want to see him bend over for that kind of money. It's ridiculous considering that we already rejected 12 million for Baines, and then that's only an added 16 million for Fellaini when we've actually paid, with the add-ons, we've actually paid 7.5 for him. So with the inflated transfer market, that was ridiculous. And then I guess we all got a little bit hopeful that we were going to keep them and then still add, because that was the stance that we were kind of getting, that we were strong financially, we didn't need to sell. Since then, it's changed a little bit to he's not getting involved in those conversations, and it's out of his hands. And so it's over to Kenwright, which we know how that's gone down in the past. And yeah, I think the writing's on the wall for one off, if not both, going into last night's game. I think that had everyone a little bit apprehensive, knowing that it could be both of their last games, and I guess everyone analysed our performance a little bit more last night because we were watching those two and thinking how would we perform without those two. So I guess the feeling with us now is a lot different to what it was, say, a week ago. Yeah,
it seems like Kenwright wants to sell. I think the feeling around the club and with the playing group and also with Martinez himself is that we've had a bit of a slap in the face from United and especially Moyes. And I don't feel like any Evertonian supporter would want to sell for cheap now. There's not a lot of time left in the transfer window. So it's going to limit who we can get in to replace someone like a Fellaini or a Baines. And Manchester United are still, you know, lowballing us. And I think we should just stand firm. And if they really want these players, then they're going to have to come hard.
Yeah, that's the thing as well. Moyes is under pressure. He hasn't signed anyone. Well, he's signed one person, a young fullback, who, you know, that was pretty early in the window, so I'm guessing that would have been teed up by Sir Alex before Moyes come in. So he hasn't brought in any of his own players yet. He's at Man United, which, you know, the biggest club in England. The fans are on his back. They want him to do something. He's failed with Fabregas. He's failed with Ozil. There's been reported other bids that...
Thiago.
Yeah, that he's failed in. You know, he's because of the no one coming in, he hasn't been able to make the decision to let Rooney go. He's had to keep him. Whether he's unsettled or not, you know, it depends what reports you believe. You know, their relationship from the time at Everton and everything was probably a bit fractured from the time that he told him that he wanted to leave Everton. And Moyes obviously at the time thought that it was best for him to stay at Everton for a couple more years and wasn't ready. So, you know, there's probably tension there. So that they need to come in with... We need to pressure them, and yes, and the later it gets, you know, the balls should be more in our court than the opposite way. And the way the media talk about it, it's like the later it goes, oh well, you know, we're just gonna have to sell. Well, it should be the complete opposite. It should be the later it goes. You're right. So many targets have gone. You know, Spurs have signed blokes that apparently we were interested in. Other blokes, you know, you Victor Moses. You know, signs for Liverpool. The rumours going around for that. Christian Eriksen signing for Tottenham. Leroy Fer, I know he was a Moyes target, but just options that have gone. So, you start to worry and start to get a bit apprehensive. You say, well, you know, that if they do come in, even if it is a huge bid, which you know that Ken Wright feels that he can't say no to, and we've sold our best players in the past, and we'll do it again, and we'll recover. But it does leave you a little bit scared as an Everton supporter as to what's there to replace these two players that, you know, if you look at a recent article, were ranked in the top 16 players in all of Europe last year. You know, to come in with a £28 million bid for both of them at the start. You know, we really have to make a stance on that, and we really have to really hold out for some good money, because they're going to be hard to replace. And I feel like to replace those two players, we're going to have to get 40 to 45 million and bring in four or five players. I don't think we can replace them automatically with two players. I don't think a James McCarthy and then a left back, whether you look at all the left backs we've been linked with in the world. There's been a number of them. It just seems like every left back that's going all right is linked with us. But, you know, I think Ken Wright would be silly to think that he can cash in and replace him with those two players, and then we just keep on going along. So I think it has to be a big enough bid that if we are going to replace him with two players, that we're going to have a bit of money to spend elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the ball is in our court, I think. The best thing that we've got going on is that the two players themselves haven't said anything or come out in the media and said that they want to leave. They've been complete professionals, as Martinez has said on many occasions. So the players seem happy where they are.
Mm.
We're going to be a better team if they're in the side. Moyes hasn't signed anyone, and there's a huge expectation on signings at Manchester United.
Mm.
And if they start to lose a few games or have a few draws where they're not supposed to, there's going to be a lot of pressure from the fans on Moyes straight away, because he hasn't brought anyone in. So I don't understand how they keep lowballing us bids when they've got no chips, you know?
Yeah, well, tonight's huge for them as well. They play Liverpool at Anfield. David Moyes has never won at Anfield. I know it was with Everton, but it you know, it's a psychological thing. If they lose or get a draw tonight, then they're either 4 or 5 points from three games. It's a similar position to what we are, you know, and that's not what Man United expect. They expect to win every game, and if they don't, they at least expect to try. And I think everyone that watched the Man United-Chelsea game the other week, or last week, you know, I think Man United supporters were a little bit annoyed at the way that Man U played. It was a home game, and they just didn't seem to want to win it. The substitutions they made, some of the decisions they made, the formation they played, never looked at like they were chasing the game at all. It looked like they were just happy for a draw. They were playing quite conservative. Chelsea, on the other hand, were doing the same thing, but they're away at Old Trafford against Man United. A draw is a good result for them. So, yeah, the pressure's definitely there. And I think tonight's result, whether the deals are done before the Liverpool-Man U game, that who knows. But you would think that if they get a draw or a loss tonight against Liverpool, that the blowtorch just goes up a million times to what it is already. You know, we say we're going to give Martinez time because we're not Man United, but I don't think Moyes will get the same treatment there if he starts having a few bad results.
Yeah.
The pressure's huge.
Yeah, if they don't get a result tonight, I think the bid will increase dramatically.
Mm. And that's the thing, whether it has been agreed. You kind of hope. Well, you hope that it goes through to that, or at least we know so we can line up replacements and it's just a matter of time. But at the same time, if it hasn't, tonight's result is huge. And maybe even he's feeling that on the eve of that, and that's why we've agreed, because maybe we've got a better bid. There's been no talk of fees just yet. So it's just all a bit of speculation that it's on the horizon, but it'd be interesting to see what they're prepared to fork out. And I think everyone, as Everton supporters, will be disappointed if it is you know, a figure that's around anything lower than the release clause or anything around that release clause, we're in the position, once that release clause expired, to hold out for a big offer. And I think it'd be really disappointing if we didn't. I know everyone talks about Kenwright and Moyes' relationship, but, geez, Kenwright has to understand now that Moyes isn't there anymore. He's doing trying to do the best thing by Man United. Kenwright has to do the best thing by us. He can't just say, oh, you know, but we've got a good relationship and he's a good bloke and he's got a lot of pressure on Man United, and let sentiment and things get in the way. He needs to be a bit more like Daniel Levy from Tottenham and really bend them over, I guess, and get all he can, because we're going to need as much money as we possibly can to move forward. And, you know, we've got a few talented players in that side that are young, and we've got a few that are ageing. We need to replace those blokes with young up-and-coming players, so that even if we have a less than successful season this year, that we're, you know, I'll take top 10 finish if the players we bring in show the message that we're bringing in young players, and that in 2 or 3 years we're going to be able to compete with the best.
Yeah, I think they have to show a bit of respect to us. They've shown no respect to us, Man United and Moyes in particular. So why should we show them any respect by, you know, giving in to a lower bid when they've basically just come out and slapped us in the face over and over, and now we're just going to crumble because Kenwright has a good relationship with Moyes. Mm. Obviously, Moyes doesn't have the same feelings for Everton that he did in the past.
I think as well, he said when he was leaving, like the thing that shits us all is he said, I want to be able to, I always want to be able to walk through the front doors of Goodison Park when I come here.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to come as a visiting manager. He wants to come as a past manager and someone who, you know, we were really appreciative as fans. When the announcement went through, we could have been absolutely scathing on him, but instead, he coached out the rest of the season. We gave him a real warm reception. You know, the images of him, Phil Neville and Tim Cahill on his last game, you look at that kind of stuff and, you know, and us being so supportive of the move. And I posted on Twitter the other day that at the start, you know, everyone was kind of hopeful that he did well, you know, wanted him to go the next step. But now the fact, some of the things that he said in the media, and the bid, and people say it's Woodward, you know, he does the bids and he does all the transfer negotiations, but Moyes as a manager has to sign off on the bid. Yeah. He has to, you know, be part of that process. He doesn't just say, go and get these players, and then doesn't have any input as to what he wants to pay for them.
Yeah.
He knows his transfer budget, and he's got to be across that as well. You know, that's up to him to manage. And I think the biggest thing that was really a slap in the face, it wasn't even the $28 million bid. It was after the $28 million, for him to come out and say, oh, if I was at Everton, I think the best thing to do is always best by the player, and I would have let them both go. For $28 million, like, that's just ridiculous. That's just meddling. When it was Lescott, it was a completely different situation. Man City had been taken over. There's plenty of money, and they come in for Lescott with a terrible bid, and Moyes openly slates him in the media and says, you know, we're Everton and we sell expensively. Yeah, he goes to Man United and he just conveniently and quickly forgets that.
Yeah, I think it's a bit naive to just say, oh, I don't do the scouting, so I'm not involved in that process. Mm. He has to realise that he's the new face of that club. And if you knew that your scouts were going over to your old club, who everyone has good feelings about you, there would be a point where you stand in and go, hold on, like, I don't stand for this. And get involved and try and stop them from making an absolutely disgraceful bid to us.
Yeah, and I think everyone's fine with the fact that he was always going to, no matter what you heard from Kenwright about deals and telling him not to come back for certain players, I think we all knew how highly regarded Baines and Fellaini are in Moyes' opinion. You know, he built a side around those two players, and I think we're all a bit naive to think that he wouldn't come back for them. But you got the feeling that because he was here, he should know their worth and come in and get the deal done. Give us the price that that we know we should get. Give us the price we know we want. We all sensed it. As soon as the release clause expired, we sensed that someone, we didn't know who at the time, but we knew that someone was going to lowball us with the Fellaini release clause. No one activated it when they had the chance at around $23 million, we believe. For it to be Man U and for it to be Moyes, just instantly lost the respect of 90% of the Everton supporters. And, you know, I'm definitely one of them. When I see him on TV now and I see Man United play, and I can't think of anything worse, I can't think of anything better than him getting beat and him failing now there. Yeah. And you know, I think the way he's treated us as his old club and someone that he said, you know, he's here for 11 years. Like, that's longer than a lot of Matt. That's 10 times what a lot of managers get in the Premier League. And, you know, he got us Champions League once, but we didn't even make it past the qualifying phase the next year. So, you know, he was afforded a lot of time for someone. When you look at the history of Everton, it really wasn't as successful we have been in the past. And I know people look at how much money we had, but he has to be grateful for that time and the patience that the fans and Ken Wright had with him, and the reception that he got. Yeah, just for him to come back and act the way he has. Yeah, I think he'll get a fair reception the next time he's at Goodison.
Yeah, I think it's. I also get the feeling that it's kind of a slap in the face to the players themselves. On the one hand, you've got Martinez, who goes back to Wigan. As soon as the transfer window opens, they give him a price on what the valuation is, and he says, yes, these players are superstars and I want them in my new team. And Moyes has done completely the opposite of that. These were his two prized assets at Everton. He's made the move to Manchester United, and then he comes back and he goes, oh, I want them, but, you know, I'm not prepared to pay that much for them. It's kind of like, if they were your two guys, and everyone knows that they were his two number ones, why wouldn't you just come and say, yep, yeah, I'm prepared to pay for these because I know the quality and we have a great relationship? It's kind of like, it's a bit of a slap in the face to those two players.
And the thing is, even the Man United supporters are saying it. Like, they're the ones saying, Moyes, just get it done, just offer what they're worth. Like, even they were the ones saying, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're not at Everton anymore. You've got the funds.
Yeah.
You want the players. Go and get it done. Yeah. This whole circus that's created and leaking to the media that, you know, well, whether it's, that's the other thing, whether it's the players' agents wanting to get a move so they can get an agent's fee, or whether it's Man United leaking, but someone's leaking that the players want to leave. Mm. Now, that's we believe that's not the case. While it might be internally, that wouldn't be leaked from the players. They've been, if they were going to say that kind of thing, they'd come out publicly and say it. You know, Fellaini's had no problem saying in the past that eventually he wants to play Champions League. He could have said that again this summer, but since all the rumours, they've both stayed quiet. I think we've seen times where Baines has been seen out, and people have asked him, you know, will you go to Man United? And he said, that's up to the boss, that's up to the chairman. You know, they've been great for our club, and the one thing is, they're not going to hold us to ransom. They're going to do the right thing by us and make sure that we get compensated. I think they have to. I think, because if Moyes isn't going to do it, then we really need the players to be on our side in this. And yes, we understand that it's a good move and you can't turn it down, but make sure that the price is right if you're going to go, and then you'll go with our blessing. You know, we can't hold you back forever if that's what you're looking to do, especially in the case of Baines. Like, I think that we can. I think with the right strategy, we can get back competing for the top four, even though a lot of people are looking at it the opposite, saying, oh, well, the financials are just, you know, the gap's getting bigger and bigger. But if you're smart about it, we've got a lot of young players, which we'll talk about a bit later, that are coming through, and I think if you do it the right way, we can get there. So in Fellaini's case, you know, you think you can get a couple of years for him to wait, but definitely in Baines' case, you can't blame him. He's given good service. He's 28. A good price for him. Now, as you know, if you're looking at the future, would be probably the best time to move him on, as much as I love him, but you have to be a realist and say, well, if you can get 15 to 18 million for him, it's a good deal.
Yeah, and I think with Fellaini. He's had his best year by far last year, playing in a more attacking, progressive role. And I don't think that he's going to play that role under Martinez. So I think this is kind of the best value that you're going to get for him while he plays that role. I mean, there's not that many centre defensive midfielders going around for $25 million in the world.
That's exactly right. And people will say, oh, yeah, but he's such an attacking threat. Well, not in the current position that he's going to be played in Martinez's system. Yeah. And I think that's what people don't look at when they look at, and we'll talk about a bit later about McCarthy and rumours like that. But in terms of any replacement, what they have to realise is they're just replacing the defensive midfielder position. Then it gives us a little bit of money to play with in other positions that he sees as deficiencies, or he sees that we need younger blokes coming through to, you know, succession planning or however he wants to look at it. $25 million or anything around that figure for a defensive midfielder, and let's be honest, yes, he scored 12 goals last year in the league and was our top goal scorer, but he's not going to do that from defensive midfield, and therefore, if we don't sell him now, by the end of the year, you can only feel that he'll only be worth around $15 million.
Yeah. So we'll move on from that. We've talked a little bit about Baines and Fellaini, and there's been plenty of media around that kind of that deal going through and he said, she said kind of thing. So we'll talk now about the first two games of the season. What were your thoughts on, firstly, the draw at Norwich, the 2-2 draw, and then the 0-0 draw with West Brom?
Watching all the pre-season games as well, you can see the idea. You can see where they're trying to change and the kind of football that they're trying to play. The Norwich game, I was really pleased. I know a lot of people, they're just itching to get a win when you play a side like Norwich, but Norwich away at Carrow Road, and I think everyone forgets that we didn't get a result at Carrow Road last year. So we did better than we did last year under Moyes and playing a different plan. We got beat there, and it's a hard place to go, as you'll hear people say. And they've strengthened, and they're not a bad side. They're going quite well this year. And I think everyone looks at Norwich and says, oh, well, they're bottom half, but they finished top half last year, and they've reinvested and bought some good players. Ben Wolfswinkel, Fur, Hooper, Redmond, they've really strengthened their attacking side of their game. And just in general in the game, I thought we were really unlucky not to get the 3 points, and that's all it was. It wasn't anything that Martinez did. It wasn't anything the players did. It was just a little bit of luck. Their first goal bobbled around and the fullback was able to get through and hit the post, obviously, the perfect rebound straight back to him, puts it in. And then the second one, the same thing. The fullback's having a shot and it scuffs off, and Wolfswinkel just a class finish. And can't do anything about that. I thought both our goals were great. You had Barkley with an absolute stunner, which was really good for him to open his account, and great for his confidence if he's going to play a big part this year, which looks like he is. And then Coleman as well, getting a bit of reward for getting forward, which we all like to see. We like to see him running it at the opposition. So really happy with the game style in that game. You know, there is a lot of people say 2 points drop, but I don't think you could do much about the 2 goals. It's just luck. Mm. And you hope that later in the season it evens itself out and maybe we get a little bit lucky. And then the West Brom game as well, we'll talk about. But
yeah,
what were your thoughts on Norwich?
On the Norwich game, I just thought we were a lot more deliberate in what we were doing compared to Norwich. The possession stats spoke for themselves. It was our first game that I really sat down and watched from start to finish. I didn't really pay much attention to the pre-season games. And I was really impressed with the style of play. I mean, we held possession. Our possession stats were unbelievable at the end of the game. We just basically dominated that whole game. Mm. And every time we went forward and ended up scoring, it was a lot more deliberate effort. Like, the guys knew what they were doing, and we worked it into dangerous positions. Whereas when Norwich went forward, it was kind of, get the ball to the other end of the ground and hope something happens. And yeah. two times it did. And I think in games like that last year, those two lucky goals that they scored, we wouldn't have scored enough goals to offset that. So all of a sudden you're staring at a loss.
Yeah.
But we were good enough to put the ball in the net twice. And I was happy to get out of there with a draw, really. I mean, at the end of the day, we should have won. That was a winning performance.
Yeah.
But all things being said, I think we were lucky that we didn't get beat by scoring two goals.
Yeah, conceding two goals, if someone tells you concede two goals away, you would think that, you know, to score two goals away is a big effort. So you would think that if someone told you that you conceded two goals away, you would put that down as a loss every day of the week. So I agree there. And I think as well, what people might not understand with the possession game is, yes, all right, at some stages it might be slow, and you know, and that depends on what you've got in front of you. If the other team are looking to play, or if they're parking the bus and you're trying to break them down. I think one thing that people have to realise is, when you have the ball, they don't. And I think the one thing that I noticed out of that game, and we'll talk about the West Brom game as well, but we're not giving teams chances like we have in the past. And I think under Moyes, yes, we were direct, and yes, we were long balls, and also, you know, we also played as well. I think as unfair criticism, it was all long ball tactics. But we were a lot more direct. We just tried to get it up there, and a bit like Norwich did to us, just work it around and see if we can get a shot off. I think what's different now is that when we did that, by playing that direct style of play, we could lose the ball and we'd let the other team have just as much of the possession, therefore just as many chances. And I think in the way the Premier League is now, there's good players everywhere. You don't play a side now that doesn't have a striker that can snag a goal. So, or midfielders that can work it around or create chances. So I think it's the right idea. The fact that if you've got possession, they don't have it, and then if you minimise their chances and you've got possession, then obviously you're going to create enough for yourself to win them. It's just a case of putting them away. And against Norwich, we put a couple away, and there was even a couple that we probably were unlucky not to. It could have been three or four. But like you say, you concede two goals, you're happy to get out of there with a draw.
Yep. So the West Brom game, nil all draw. What were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, first home game under Martinez, so everyone was really looking forward to it. We had, I think, bar one, the best home record in the Premier League last year. You know, it's a hard place to come, Goodison Park, and I think that's a credit to the fans for making it that way, and the players lift when they play there. Everyone was really excited just to see how we'd go at home, and obviously the expectation of 3 points and how Martinez side would deal with that. Once again, yes, look at the scoreline, nil all. You think boring, you think another draw. You think 2 points dropped. But if you watch the game, definitely wasn't boring. We definitely had our chances. But yes, I can't help but feel that was maybe 2 points dropped. We had all the chances. They had basically none. We were terribly unlucky. Or whether it's unlucky, or whether you look at the quality in our final third, whether it's still getting used to the game plan, I'm supportive of the game plan. As I said, I can see the idea, and it is good to watch. But you want the goals to start coming, because and you know once they come, they'll come thick and fast. But you need them. You need the goals coming at home, and then, you know, worry about the defensive stuff afterwards. I guess when you're playing at home, you've got to go for the win. I thought we did that, so I don't think that was the issue. I think it was more our quality in the final third, and that's something that we'll talk about a little bit later, and the lack of a really good finish on the end of all the chances we created. And, you know, you look, we had a huge amount of chances in that game, not a lot on target, so that just shows that it's not creating the chances, it's finishing them off.
Yeah, I think one of the main positives that did come out of that game for me was that all through pre-season and the game at Norwich first up, that our defence has been under question. I think with this new game style that Martinez is trying to introduce to the team, the defence has been one of the last areas to kind of pick up on that and work out how they were going to keep a clean sheet using this kind of play style. So I think the main positive that came out of that game was the clean sheet. I thought the guys were really solid at the back, and also Howard played very well.
I think that's what everyone thought. Yeah, everyone thought that. I guess when you're talking about the defence, everyone's biggest concerns was Martinez coming in, and looking at Wigan's results, they weren't the greatest at keeping a clean sheet, and they did leak goals, and that was the thing with Martinez's philosophy is that yes, you'll score them, but you will leak them. And I think in the pre-season, you're right, we looked hopeless at the back. But whether that's, you know, a few rusty players and just getting started, and a few mixtures of different pairings to see how they worked, I think that is a pleasing aspect, that we got a clean sheet, because you can always work on the forward play. You can always work on if it's just the final third that you're struggling, because if you get the chances, and the more you work at it, the goals will come. So I think it would have been more concerning had we had another high-scoring game. You know, a nil-all draw is better than a 3-3 draw in terms of a Martinez game plan and trying to bring that in because of his past history with leaky defences.
So what were your thoughts on Disson and Jagielka in particular in that game?
Yeah, so people will say they're one of the best pairings in the Premier League, that left foot right foot combination. They complement each other really well. Jag's always getting those last stitch blocks in and those important tackles, and what he lacks for in pace, Disson's always covering for him. So they're a good partnership. But my biggest concern watching the preseason and watching Norwich, and even now, you know, they are encouraged to play the ball in Martinez's formation and his philosophy, and they've got to play it out of defence. And I can't help but get nervous when Jags or Sylvan are on the ball. Disson in the preseason got caught a couple of times with the ball, and you know, it made us really look second rate. They will improve in that area, but I can't help but think going forward, you know, with Disson being 35 and Jags being over 30 now, can't help but think that the next wave of centre back that he brings through, like you've got young John Stones, who just looks like he's the heir apparent. They've just got to get some games into him, and he's got to build up a little bit. But he looks like he's there. But it's about finding that next centre back, and I think when they bring in that next centre back as a replacement for Disson, he has to be able to play the ball, and I think eventually that's Martinez's plan. But at the moment, he has to work with these two guys because they're so good defensively and been so good for so long that we just, I guess, have to have our hearts in mouths when they start playing the ball around at the back. But hopefully they get better at it. And as I said, we've got to give him time. We're a couple of games in, so it's natural to see something different and the players getting used to something different. You know, Jags and Disson are used to just either passing off to the fullbacks or putting it long to Fellaini. So, you've got to have patience with them. But, yeah, it does get a little bit scary when they start playing the ball at the back.
All right, so the cup tie at Stevenage, I didn't actually see that game. So I'll just let you go give us a bit of a brief on how that went and what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, so obviously it's a little bit hard, being that we're in Australia, that you don't get access to the Capital One Cup in terms of watching. So I streamed that. I listened to it on the radio. But it's quite good coverage. So, I didn't feel like I missed too much. And then watching the 20-minute highlights after it, I thought I saw enough of the game. I thought everyone's, you know, fuming over the draw. But
Everyone has to realise there was 8 changes to that side. That's something that Moyes never would have dreamed of doing, the fact of using his whole squad. And that's always been what everyone says our problem is. They say, you know, they say we won't make top four because we haven't got enough legs, we haven't got enough numbers, we don't have enough bodies. I think Martin is the one thing that he has done. He's realised that and tried to strengthen the squad. He's brought in blokes that can play a role. And when you make 8 changes... and still, I thought we still played some really good football, and you know, unearthed a few youngsters there, and you've got now Deulofeu getting his first start for Everton in a competitive match, and I thought he was great. Kone as well. Now, you know, people fume and say he was terrible, and yes, he's not Robin van Persie, but the encouraging thing is he hasn't been playing, so. He's always going to be rusty, but he got in the right positions. He had a few opportunities. Yes, he scuffed them, and I think he might be a bit hit or miss, but it looks like at the moment, in terms of our transfer targets, that we might have to just put up with what we've got up front for at least this year and maybe reassess in January or next summer. I think the criticism that we got into Stephen each game was really off the mark. I don't think supporters are looking at the bigger picture in that, you know, 8 changes to a side that, you know, has been pretty consistent throughout and it's been the same name. So to be able to see those players get a rest, which is going to be valuable, you know, come the end of the season, I think that was the encouraging thing. And we got out of there with a win. We go through. Doesn't matter whether it's 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. It's 3 points. Well, not even 3 points. It gets you through. And you into the next round, and it's forgotten. So yeah, I was really happy that they got minutes into blokes like Stones and Deulofeu and on that Stones as well. Yes, he was good in pre-season, but it's always different in the competitive matches, and he was brilliant against Stevenage. So yeah, I think we've got a couple to look forward to there.
Yeah, and I think the Deulofeu goal was a quality goal, you know, from a young kid running at defenders in the box. Taking them the wrong way, 2 defenders, and then seeing an opening in the bottom corner and having the ability to slot that. I thought that was just a really, really classy goal and something that we've probably lacked in past years. And for a kid with, you know, being 19 to be able to have the confidence to do that, I think it just really gets all the fans up and about.
Yeah, he's got some quality. He's got, and as they say, final ball or you know, end product. That's what he's got. Not just tricky enough to get in a position to get a cross off. He's not just tricky enough to get in a position and get a shot off. It's the quality of the ball that then comes. You know, that shot just showed, saw the opening and had no hesitation in putting it away. Same with some of the balls that he put in. There was another shot a curling shot that was just wide of the top corner in that game. You know, and a couple of low crosses and things like that. He managed to get himself in a position and get that ball off. Whether it's if it's not a shot, it's going to be a cross and it's going to be in the right area. So I think the team need to realise the quality he has and be on the move when he's got the ball and getting the right areas, because he's going to tee him up and, you know, he's going to be really valuable. I think in the second half of the year, once he's adapted to the pace of it, I think the calls to start him are a bit premature, and I think people have to realise that coming from the Barcelona B team, you know, they're not, it's coming into Premier League, and what Premier League fans take for granted is the difference between the Premier League and other leagues around the world. It is more physically demanding. It is, I guess, a bit tougher. You get away with a little bit more in terms of physicality. He's only a young man. I mean, he hasn't grown up playing the British way. So, yes, he'll fit into Martinez's philosophy, and that's great that Barcelona have trusted him with that. But you know, we have to be patient with him, as Martinez says, and the rewards will come hopefully sooner rather than later, when we start seeing a fair bit more of him.
All right, so the lineup going into Cardiff, we'll go over that. So we had Howard in goals as usual, Coleman, Jags, Diston, Baines. Then we had Morales, Fellaini, Osman and Pienaar in the midfield. And then we also had Barkley in that centre attacking position
as he's been playing so well in the first two games. And then up front, we started with Jelovic, who showed his form that he might have been back to form in the preseason matches. So he's been going all right. But what were your thoughts on the lineup going into the Cardiff game?
Yeah, you know my reservations on Osman, but at the same time, you have to play him if you've got no one else to play there, and that's why I think we're on the lookout for a central midfielder in the transfer market. And had we kept Fellaini, if that is the case, and you know nothing's done until it's done, but I think they were always still looking to get in another central midfielder because of Gibson's body being unreliable. I think Gibson makes a massive difference to the way we play. I'm a big rat for him. I think it just shows in the games that he plays, the results that we've got so far, you know, so much different to when he's not there. So you've got to play Osman in that case, but I think it's a real concern that if you're playing Osman in central midfield, that you really need to strengthen in that area. Other than that, I don't think you could fault the lineup. I think he gave Kone his chance in the Capital One Cup game against Stevenage. And because he didn't put those chances away, he really didn't make Martinez pick him for the next game. I couldn't help but feel Martinez gave him that chance because he wanted him to score a couple so that he felt he could start him in the next league game. He didn't, and therefore he had to go with Jelovic, who had proven in the preseason that he had goals in him, which has probably saved him from being transferred, to be honest, because if he was in the same form as last year, and then what he's shown the first couple of weeks, yes, he's had a couple of chances, but it just looks like a different player to when he first came. And I guess they're my two issues. I love the rest of the way we set up, but central midfield, I think, you know, had we had anyone else to go there, then obviously Osman wouldn't be playing there. And you know, Jelovic and Kone doesn't really give us at the moment. We need one of them to be in form, whether it needs to be Jelovic or Kone. We need one of them to strike a bit of form, so we've got a first choice striker and we've got someone that's reliable to put them in when we've got the chances, and it's huge for a striker to have a bit of confidence, because once they score one, generally two, three, four follow. So with the lineup, really happy, apart from those two positions, obviously. I think we could improve on those positions, but at the moment we've got nothing internally that's better. So I guess over to Kenwright and whether he's got the funds to bring some players into those positions.
Yeah, I think that'll be the measure for how Martinez's transfer window is gone. If he can get Osman out of that side, he really needs to be aiming to get Osman out of the starting lineup. And I agree with all three of our strikers. We've kind of got three guys that are all options, and one's only just over the next by a tiny, just a fraction. I mean, at any time, if one of them started to show a bit or run into a bit of form, straight away they would take over the striking role in the team. I feel that Martinez just really wants to justify being able to bring Kone in and start him on the ground, but at the moment Kone is not doing any favours for himself. He hasn't been given a whole heap of opportunity to kind of run himself into a form, so I do feel that he would be a little bit rusty after the pre-season and then not starting in a few games, and then he did get his opportunity at Stevenage, but you know that's one game, whereas Jelovic has been playing a lot more than that, so I kind of feel for him in that way. Yeah, but I think the rest of the lineup is pretty stock standard. I mean, there's no one there that you think, oh, you know, why is he starting?
Yeah, well, I guess everyone, you constantly hear people say, oh, they need to play Fellaini up top, they need to play Fellaini up top. And it gets frustrating because what people have to understand is if you watch Barkley play and all the raps that he's got for the start of the season, if Fellaini plays up top, Barkley doesn't.
Mm.
And Barkley might not even play, because whether Roberto Martinez will play him as a, I guess, a more withdrawn role in central midfield remains to be seen. But I think what people have to understand is developing Barkley right now is the most important thing in our well, in our club's progress going forward. We need to develop him, get games into him, and build around him because, you know, the reports are right. This kid could be anything.
Yeah, I mean, you're potentially looking at Fellaini leaving the club, and you've got a 19-year-old who looks like he could be anything in the game. So who do you give the preference to when Fellaini wants to play in a defensive role? He believes he's better in a defensive role, but the easy thing to do is just put him forward because he might be able to snag a few goals here and there. That's not the long-term plan for the club, and it's not going to be what's better for us in the long run.
Yeah, that's not going to get us Champions League football, and that needs to be the goal. Now, Roberto Martinez says he can see it. He didn't say this year, and that's the thing that everyone has to realise. Needs time. He has got the right idea, and I think you'll see with his transfer policy that, yes, in terms of loans and bringing bodies in and free transfers and things, he has brought in older players when you look at Alcaraz, but he was a free transfer. People have to realise that. So he's just an extra body, an extra experienced defender, which I have no problems with. If Barry comes in on loan, people look at it and say he's 32 years old. But once again, it's a loan. All you're playing for is his wages. It's another body. It's someone to help the Barclays. And if you get in a McCarthy, who's 22, he's only a young boy as well, he's someone to help develop those kind of players. So I think you'll see the players that he does spend money on, Kone aside, obviously, because he saw a striker as a need and he thought he could get a good one for $5 million, and he does rate him. So I think that's something that we need to understand, that we need to have a bit of patience because he does rate Kone. I think that when he does spend his money, you look at Joel Robles, Delafeu on loan, McCarthy coming in, playing Barkley, playing Stones. I think his idea is to get the best youngsters and bring them in young and then let them develop together. And I think it's a bit like here in what they've realised in Australian sport that maybe they've lost sight of in the English game and football around the world is you don't have to, if you can't, don't have the financial power to go and buy the best players in the world, you really have to buy them young and develop them. And what you see in the Australian game of football here is clubs constantly looking at the next big things and selling off or letting go of big-name players for the opportunity to bring in youngsters and let a young group develop together. And I think that's when you'll find we'll be at our best. If you give him time, give Martinez time, let him bring in his targets, make sure he's going down the right way, and I think he is. And I think you'll see with the targets he brings in, they'll be young and they'll be highly rated with a lot of potential. And I think if they can all develop together, might help Barkley stay because they're all around the same age, and we might be able to convince him that look, this we're going somewhere. And I think that's all we want to see is that we are going somewhere. We're not expecting huge things this year. It's a year of transition, but we want to see that kind of thing. My other comment is when we go back to the strikers. You're right in what you say with the three being marginally better than one another. At the end of last year, Victor Anichebe was our number one striker.
Mm.
Now he's vanished off the face of the earth. Now there's rumours of him going to Hull City, which if it was for $5 or $6 million, I'd be all inclined to take it because if he's not even going to play on the bench, then you know you're better off getting something for him if he's third in the pecking order, and if you can get a little bit of money for him. Table it with another $4 or $5 million. You can go and look at another attacker, maybe, or might be able to bring someone in another position that Martinez sees fit. So that'll be interesting to see if that's just rumor or if there is sufficient interest and they can get the transfer funds and where Anichebe sits. Now Martinez did go for him when he was at Wigan a couple of years ago, so he does rate him somewhat. But I think he's third in the pecking order, but. Whether I agree with that, I'm a bit with you. I'm a bit like they're all much of a muchness at the moment, and one of them needs to show that they're better than the other one. One of them needs to prove their point. Jelavić just had a few games to do it in the preseason. He put a few away, but he needs to do it when it counts in the league, when it's for points. And I think it's a matter of time before you see Kone starting because I know that's what Martinez wants to do. He's just doing the right thing by Evan and the supporters by giving Jelavić a chance.
Yeah, and just on the calls. For Fellaini to go forward in our lineup. I mean, we've already got Osman playing next to him in a central or central defensive midfielder role. What happens to our central midfield if Fellaini starts playing forward. Who, like, Osman clearly looks like a fish out of water in that position. Fellaini kind of offsets that because he is so good back there. You push Fellaini into Barkley's role. Where does Barkley go? And then who steps into the defensive role? You're just going to leave our defence open.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think what people don't realise, and the commentators in particular, don't watch Everton and don't, you know, every week and don't keep up to date with what's going on. They say, yes, push Fellaini forward. But could you imagine a central midfield pairing of Leon Osman and Ross Barkley? Like, Ross Barkley, yes, he's a good player, and eventually that might be his position as a box-to-box midfielder. But what he gives us now on the attacking side, he's pretty much the only thing creating threats for us at the moment. And alternatively, he's still prone to lose the ball. And you can't lose the ball in your defensive area, in your defensive half. And Osman's exactly the same. And as you say, Fellaini offsets that because he's so good and he keeps the ball. But yeah, you need two strong central defensive or central midfielders, whether one plays a little bit more defensive than the other, but you need two strong central midfielders to be a good side in the Premier League. I think otherwise you just get cut open, and especially on the counter-attack and them getting into positions in the middle, you really need those players to be strong enough to hold the ball and hold their own. And at the moment, he does. Osman looks like he just can't play that role, and he's been a great servant, and I don't have anything against him personally. I think he's been great for us, but it's just not his position. And I think at the moment he's just trying to do a job there until we find someone else.
Yeah. All right, so we'll move into the game against Cardiff. We saw Everton fall into that game plan straight away. Keep possession, pick your passes, try and hold the ball up for as long as possible, move it forward, don't give up possession. And we also saw a Cardiff team that were pushing aggressively back into our defensive third, you know, attacking Baines. But Bellamy was attacking Baines.
An elbow in there as well.
Yeah, threw in a sneaky elbow, which wasn't seen by the ref, coincidentally or fortunately for Cardiff. There was a few situations where it looked like the ref wasn't really watching the game or had an ulterior motive, who knows. But yeah, I thought that was a bit worrying at the start. The guys from Cardiff really putting a lot of pressure on our defence, who are the guys who won't be able to control the pass or control the ball as well as some of our midfielders or our forwards. So I thought we looked good once we got the ball into our offensive half and even our final third. The pressure really seemed to drop off from Cardiff, and we kind of started to push them back into the box. But it was a little worrying once, you know, Diston wants to get on the ball and, you know, do a few tricks, turn the corner, and the guys are running at him because he is prone to have that brain fade or that slip or something like that. So I was nervous seeing that early, and it seemed to drop off more and more into the game. We started to push them back further and further. Their intensity did drop off as the game went on, but I just thought that didn't really suit the style of what we were trying to do. So that's one to look out for in the future. One of the main points that happened early on was Morales getting two free headers in the box.
He needs to put those away. People say he's more of a wide player. He's a forward. In whichever way you look at it, he was playing as a striker as well as a winger for Olympiacos before he came along to us. He needs to put those away, free headers. You need to at least get them on target, at least force a save. I'm not saying they need to rocket into the back of the net or put a hole in it or anything like that. They just need to be on target. And to have two, you know, one you can forgive, but that second one, that really just has to be forcing a save.
Yeah, they didn't even go close to goal. I mean, at least, you know, as you said, if it had have hit the goalkeeper on the chest, I would have been happy. At least, you know, there is that chance that it might go to one side and you have to work him or something like that. But it was like he got his head to it, and that's where his job stopped, you know. it's in the fourth row.
Yeah, I think the difference between this game, I wasn't as happy with this result as the West Brom nil or draw, as funny as that sounds, seeing it was away. But the West Brom nil or draw, their best player was the goalkeeper.
Mm.
And whereas here, yes, while there was that incredible save from the Jelovic chance, which we all thought he was beaten. Even the Cardiff supporters would have thought that. While there was that save, it was probably the only really tough thing that he had to do, that Marshall had to do all game. And it's all well and good to create the chances, but yeah, as we keep harping on that finish, that being able to work the goalkeeper, you need to be able to overwork him and to put him on target, because eventually one's going to go in. But if you're not hitting the target, then there's no hope.
So. Yeah. Yeah, especially, no defender, free header, inside the box running towards the goal. All he had to do was just put something on it. He would have had pace off the head. It could have gone anywhere, but they were just really two poor efforts, really.
And yeah, I agree. When you're looking at chances as well, you're concerned about... Sometimes, I guess last night was the first time I saw it, because I didn't really see it as an issue in the other two games. But last night, it looked like we were too concerned and too conservative to just have a shot.
Mm. Yeah. Jelovic, Morales in particular, I thought, for someone who is so creative and can handles the one-on-one with the defender probably better than anyone else in our team. Coleman's right up there as well, but I think Morales is probably the number one the guy that you would want running at a defender coming into the box. He just kind of looked like that wasn't what he was supposed to be doing in the new game style. He just looked a little bit apprehensive to take the chance in case he lost the ball, whereas I think Coleman looked better every time he went into the box. His game plan didn't change at all. He was running at defenders as he usually does. He had his signature jinx and step overs, and I think that's where Morales was really lacking. So he didn't really make up for the fact that he missed those two free headers with the fact that, he was taking on defenders, trying to break the line and put the ball in to the right spot. It was kind of like he didn't have any kind of weapons in that game.
Yeah, there's no cutting edge in his game, and that's the one thing that we all love about him. While he might make mistakes, you put up with him with Morales because... he does score. He creates. He gets on the end of things, and he might have a terrible game, but he only needs five minutes of a purple patch to put in one or two. And I think he showed that when he got fit towards the end of last year, and in the preseason this year, he just looked like he might be, I guess, in comparison, it's not the right comparison, but our Bale, the bloke that you can have a good game all around, but then you've got that one bloke that does something special and gets you a win.
Yeah.
And he just last night he didn't look like that. It didn't look like he was a threat. We got more of a threat from Coleman, our fullback, than we did from our right winger. And yeah, it, like you say, it's questioning whether he's been told to rein it in a little bit and pass it around a bit more. But I don't think that's his game. And I think we're a better side when he's running at defenders and trying to score. And yes, he can look a little bit selfish at times, but that's the kind of player he needs to be in our system.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know whether maybe the two headers were weighing on his mind. That might have given his confidence a little bit of a knock, and he might have gone back into his shell and thought, I've already cocked up two chances, really. I can't afford to cost my side anymore. But it was kind of the opposite, without his creativity at the front, we don't really have many other options going forward. I thought Pina kind of showed signs of doing that last night. He had a few signs of brilliance, putting in that creative ball that Morales and Coleman can do, which I thought was good. I mean, that's only going to help Pina going forward. He's one that I think might come under scrutiny if we bring in, if we do get a little bit of money and we do go after a creative midfielder, I think that his position will be looked at before anyone else's. I mean, obviously, we've got to get Osman out of the team, but that's not going to be the same player that replaces Osman that's going to replace Pina.
Yeah, correct. And I think I was of the same belief last night. I think Pina showed a bit. I know that he's copped a bit from the fans, but it's all because of age. You know, they look at Osman, they look at Pina, they say, we want these blokes on the bench. Yes, Osman, I agree, and I can see the point. But with Pina, I really can't see the point. I know last year was disappointing to his standards, but he's still such a very clever player, and he operates really well in a tight space. He fakes and he dummies and does all the right things at the right time to buy himself that extra space. He doesn't have the pace, and we know that, of many wingers, and he's a lot better when he comes in centrally. But that's his game, and people have to realise that's his game. And I think he really, really added a lot to us last night in a game where, you know, we didn't really have a lot down the right-hand side apart from Coleman. And that was another concern for me watching last night compared to the other two games, is we did look predictable. We tapped the ball around and kept possession, but every time we looked to go forward, seemed like we were just trying to get it down the left side to Baines.
Yeah, I think that would have been the knock on him from last night, Pina. I just think that he was too comfortable and too happy to just take the less risky option and put the ball onto the flank for Baines to run onto. And he kind of, while that has been a strength for a long time, him linking up with Baines, I think with this new system that we're playing, I think that that's going to be more of a safety blanket than something that's going to get us a lot of goals. I mean, I would have preferred to see him use that creativity to do the same kind of thing with Barkley and get the ball back into the centre. I mean, it's going to be a lower percentage and it's going to be a harder ball to play, but that's something that we need going forward, and that's how we're going to score goals. I mean, putting the ball out in front of Baines and him crossing 20 times to no one with a low percentage cross, that's not going to benefit anyone. Especially when the two headers that we did have last night were on top of Morales and they went anywhere apart from the one from Jelovic.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think we spoke about it last night, and in a bit of frustration was that, you know, it's all well and good to keep giving it out to Baines and him to keep putting in the crosses, but you've got no one there to finish him. It just seems pointless. You've got to try other avenues, and especially with this game plan. It's a pass and move game plan. There's got to be a bit more movement than just getting it down the left side and Baines and Pina playing with it between each other. You know, it worked under Moyes, but that was the game plan. It's a different game plan now. We've got options down the right, which we never had. We've got Morales and Coleman, who've both been revelations since they've come into the first team. You've got Barkley down the centre now, who's shown what he can do in terms of putting in a ball last night, a couple of balls last night, and also putting it in the back of the net as he did against Norwich. So we've got these talented players. We need to use them all, and we need to take a few risks in the final third and try and play that killer ball as to instead of, like you say, that safety blanket approach where you go to what's tried and true, go to Baines and you put something in, and I hope that you can get something on it, nick a goal. You know, it just last night, it just looked like a bit too much, and it looked like we didn't have any answers, so that's where we kept going, just to think that eventually we were going to get a breakthrough. And that was, I guess, the frustration watching last night as opposed to the first two games.
Mm. All right, so the refs last night, what were your thoughts on those? I mean,
well, we haven't even spoken about the penalty, and I guess that's because we're both so angry about it, but I think everyone looking at that game and that saw that, and the referee was in perfect position too, that was a penalty. Didn't go anywhere near the ball.
Yeah.
Went straight under Baines, maybe because Baines didn't fake it even more and stay down and things like that. You know, it's probably work to our detriment, but you shouldn't have to do it. You shouldn't have to, you know, roll around on the ground and appeal and shout and cry.
Yeah.
It should just be, it's there, give it. And that was really disappointing, especially when you're so desperate for a win. I think it would have made us a lot more comfortable had we got 3 points last night about the start of our season than to have 3 draws in a row. So it was, you know, it was a really, really important moment in the beginning of our season, and to have it missed Especially considering the other things that were missed as well, with the Bellamy elbow and a few other little tuggings of the shirt on Pino and things like that that were missed. You know, it does get a bit frustrating when it becomes a trend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I won't go on too much about the penalty. Everyone knew it was there, and it did cost us. I thought the refs were fairly ordinary towards us all game. But having said that, I don't really want to accept that we got beat because of a bad refereeing decision. Like, we didn't score. We didn't create a chance to put the ball into the back of the net. So, I mean, while the penalty would have been nice because it would have given us possibly three points at the end of the day when it's all said and done, I still think going forward we didn't do enough to create the chance that was going to put the ball in.
Yeah, correct. So,
and then on the other hand, I also was a little bit disappointed with some of the players and how they went about the refereeing decisions. I mean, Pienaar in particular. There was a couple of times last night when you would have just rathered him keep playing the ball. I mean, there was a few times when he just stopped, threw his hands in the air, turned around, looked at the ref, and next minute his player's streaming down the field with the ball, unguarded.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing, is that, yes, you're going to have games where the referee not to your liking or it's not in your favour, but you need to keep playing. You can't afford to have that moment where you chuck your hands up in the air and stop, because if your player then runs off and creates a chance because they've got they've outnumbered us in going down the other way, it's a really, really high price to pay, and you just can't afford it. You've got to think about the bigger picture, and you know, you don't want to be the cause of that. And yeah, I agree. And Morales did it a couple of times as well, but Pino was the main culprit. Is that, yes, you might have felt you got a foul, but if it's a foul, the umpire will call it. You've just got to keep playing.
Yeah, that's right. He's not going to change his mind because you throw a hissy fit on the side of the ground or something like that. I mean, get up and continue to play. There was also the Jalovic chance that was saved. I mean, we've already touched on that a little bit. So, obviously it was a great save. The keeper did go the other way and was able to put his hand back and kind of keep the ball out. It seems like keepers are our worst enemy at this stage. I mean, we have broken the defence down, or, you know, put a shot on target, and just a really freak save that was really frustrating at that stage of the game, because everyone just wanted and needed that goal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And look at Foster last week for West Brom, being their best player before he went off injured in the last 10 minutes.
Mm.
You know, it was when he was off that we looked most like making the breakthrough, because, you know, the young goalkeeper they brought on, you know, looked a bit shaky compared to how good Foster was for so much of the game. So, yeah, you know, good goalkeepers didn't really get your points, but... yeah, it does seem like at the moment they're our worst enemy, and even our own strike force, their own worst enemy as well, because we seem to be creating the chances and having the shots, but the shots just aren't on target.
Yeah, totally agree. So the other one was, who looked more dangerous going forward out of ourselves and Cardiff? I mean, my personal opinion was that we had a lot of the ball, but when we got to our final third... we couldn't really put in that final ball or have that killer instinct to kind of get us in on goal or create a chance, like a good chance in front of goal. I thought every time Cardiff kind of went forward, it was a bit more risky and a bit more long and direct. But I also thought that they looked a lot more dangerous moving into their final third. I mean, the through ball to Bellamy, that nearly should have been a goal. I mean,
yeah.
Again, with that, I thought Baines, I thought he could have done a lot more than what he did.
Just give up.
I thought Baines should have known that was going to happen. You can kind of see he was absolutely tearing to that spot, and Baines was with him, but not ahead of him. Like, you should have known that's where the ball was going to go, and that's where he was going to make his run. But he kind of didn't make any effort. He just wanted to stay with him. And then as soon as he kind of broke Baines, Baines quit. He didn't try and keep pressure on him, or you could see in his face, oh, he's past me, I can't keep up with him. What more can I do? And I just thought that was pretty poor from, you know, one of the greatest defenders in England.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you'll find that when we play other teams as well, because we've always finished quite high when you take out the top four and, you know, people say best of the rest. You will find teams that will park the bus in front of us and challenge us to break them down. And that's the thing with those sides, their only chance to hit you is to hit you on the counter attack. And then, so they, when they hit you on the counter attack, they go long direct and their numbers just all run it at once. And they run hard and try and get one. So, yeah, I agree. They look more dangerous, but mainly because they got all their players back behind the ball when we were attacking, and then they'd wait for us to turn it over, and then they'd just go. And they had a lot of pace going forward. They've got, you know, Campbell, they got Kim, and then they got Bellamy as well, that are all quite quick and tricky players. So it did make our defenders nervous, especially when you know that blokes like Jagielka can get beaten for pace. And Baines finds himself beaten for pace a little bit.
Mm.
Obviously, Diston and Coleman are quite quick, so they don't. They tend to cover for us. But yeah, we do look a bit nervy when they come on the counter attack. And yeah, definitely Baines there. A shocking piece of vision if you replayed it to him. I'm sure he wouldn't be happy with it. But that definitely should have been a goal. And whereas us, Yeah, we had all the possession, but we just move it around sideways. And as I said, it was different to the first couple of games. We move around sideways, and then when we got pressured, we just hit it over to the left and Pino and Baines would try and work something out until Baines could get a ball in, but then we just have no one in there.
Yeah. I think the other worry is with our left side, you've got Baines and Pino, and it's toss of the coin who ends up putting that final ball in or who ends up higher up the pitch, and out of the both of them, Baines is probably the one that's more likely to finish higher up the pitch, but he's also the one that's you'd prefer going back with their offense to try and defend. Pienaar's just, even though he will push back and cover for Baines, I think if we're going to play this style and we're going to be open for the counter attack, I don't think Pienaar has the pace to be able to keep up with the Bellamy or someone like that. Like,
yeah, and he showed that once or twice when they went, that he just couldn't get near him, and the central defenders had to cover. It's just lucky that when it's down that left side, you've got someone like Diston who, you know, might be 35, but he's lightning for a big fella.
Mm. So we found that Jalovic was given a fair go in the striker position. And then, I mean, personally, I was waiting for him to be subbed, and I'm glad it happened, but I think they could have even pulled the trigger a bit earlier. We saw Kone come on. What were your thoughts on how Jalovic played and the duration that he played for, and then also Kone, the duration that he played for and his performance?
Yeah, so... Well, I'm with you as well. I think we're both sitting there waiting for, thinking it was a matter of time before Jalovic got subbed. You know, he had that chance, and had he scored, you know, you look at his game and you say, oh, he was great. But, you know, you've got to look at his overall game, and he just really struggled to hold up the ball for us. He loses the ball. We get it up there, and then his job has to be to hold it until we get some support up there with him. And I think... Definitely yesterday's game, he just didn't seem to be able to do that. They were really at him, and he didn't seem comfortable on the ball. Whereas Kone, when he came on, and I know, as I said, we'll go back to the Stevenage game, and a lot of people were critical of him, but when he came on, I thought that he held it up a lot more and was getting involved with the passing and didn't seem like he was going to lose the ball. And I think he's also got the threat that if you do get a quick counter, he's got the pace that Jalovic doesn't have, so he can put in a run as well. Barkley put Jalovic in on goal once in the second half, and he really should have done better. He outside the foot and just seemed like he wanted to hit it first time. Could have taken one more touch and then put it in the bottom corner. But he just seems like a striker that's low on confidence and just wants to hit everything as hard as he can, as soon as he can, and just hope that it goes in the right direction.
Yeah, I think the difference between the two, although we haven't had much of a look at Kone, I think Jalovic doesn't want any responsibility for breaking down the defence. I think he just wants to be have the final ball played to him and then him just finish it off for the team. Whereas Kone will take more responsibility for breaking down the defence, and I think that's what we need. If someone was going to come into the side or whatever happens, I think that's we need a striker who's going to get involved in breaking down the defence and be able to have that final shot, yeah, and put the ball away.
Yeah.
So after that, there was about, I don't know, seemed like about 5 minutes to go or 7 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Morales subbed for Delafeu. I thought Morales, as we touched on earlier, I thought that it wasn't his best performance, and I was pretty happy by the time he got subbed, and I was happy that he was the one that got subbed. I mean, if I had my choice, and it's probably a little bit early, but I'd probably nearly look at playing Morales in the position that Pienaar's been playing, and then having Delafeu start on that right wing. But in this game, I mean, Pienaar was a lot more active than Morales and was giving the side a lot more, so I wouldn't debate the decision to take Morales off. I thought Delafeu was very good when he came on. He showed that, you know, he was having a shot. Given two of the shots that he had went straight to the keeper, at least he could kind of understand, let's put the ball in, let's have a shot, at least get it on target and see what happens. Whereas a lot of the other guys were just passing and passing and passing until we'd end up losing the ball. And he also had that one play where he, again, took a few defenders the wrong way, was jinking in and out, they didn't know what to do, and put that low cross in. And I mean, if you've watched any of the YouTube videos on Delafeu, you would have had to have known where the ball was going before it was even going there. He seems to jink, and if he can't open up a shot on goal, then that's his next option, to put in that low cross across the front of the goal. And I just couldn't believe that we didn't have anyone there that could at least put their foot on it. It looked like Jagielka, you know, all he had to do was just hang a foot out, and he could have scored. I mean, for them not to have someone there or not to have someone there anticipating what he was going to do, I thought that was a little bit poor. But overall, I thought Delafeu just kind of give us a little bit of energy towards the end of the game, and I thought it would have been good to see how he went for a little bit longer rather than the short period that he was brought on for.
Yeah, too little too late. I agree completely. Morales wasn't really giving us anything, and I could have told you that by the 60th minute. Let alone the 85th. And I thought that Delafeu, while, you know, he might have, people might look at it the wrong way with his shots and say, oh, what's he doing? You know, you've got to be in better positions than that, or you've got to be able to get off better shots than that. It was the fact that he understood that we just need to go for it. We needed a goal. So someone had to pull the trigger and no one was doing it. You're right, we were just passing it around. It just felt like the time was ticking away, and I was getting anxious as it ticked into the 80th minute, thinking, you know, oh, we've only got 10 or so minutes left. I would have been definitely making the sub even prior to that, give him 15 or 20 minutes, not just five. And yeah, I was wrapped with him when he came on. He gave us something. He runs at defenders. He's not afraid to do it. So, definitely one that that I would have... would have done a lot earlier.
I mean, I kind of get the feeling from Delafeu that he might even understand the way that we're supposed to be playing, or the vision of Roberto Martinez, because he's spent so much time at Barcelona. I mean, I think that he kind of understands the way that we're supposed to be playing than the rest of the players. You know, he's his style of play is more conducive to the way that Roberto wants us to play. And I feel like the other guys, while they are
starting to show signs that they can take it on. Because there is a difference in the way that they understand how they're supposed to play, it kind of makes Dulafeu look a bit outside, like he's trying something different, or whereas the other guys, because we're used to that style of play, it looks like that's the way that the Everton side is supposed to play. So I think once the rest of the team starts to come on and understand that style better, I think Dulafeu is only going to, it's only going to be easier and easier, and he's going to be able to have more impact on the game.
Yeah, I agree.
So individual performances, any individual performances that you wanted to question, or any really positive performances?
I think Coleman's start to the season's been unbelievable. I think he just keeps going from strength to strength. He's become a really established player now in a short time. Ever since he got given the Inhibbard's absence with injury, got given the responsibility of the right back position, he's made it his own, and he's turned it into a weapon for us as well. You know, we always went down the left side. Now we've got the weapon of Coleman and Morales down the right side, which makes us look a lot less lopsided and a lot harder to stop. You know, they used to just sit on Baines and Pienaar and say, stop the delivery down the left-hand side and you stop Everton. But that's changed a little bit with Coleman coming in and Morales. And obviously Ross Barkley as well, once again last night, looked like the only time that something was going to happen was when he was on the ball. He runs at defenders and he looks to open up the defence and then hit that final ball. And if there's nothing on, he's happy to hold it and try and find some space until there is something on. He takes the responsibility to do that. And I think a lot of them are just happy to pass it off to the next bloke and put the responsibility in his hands. But they need to start working together a lot more to really take those risks in the final third and trust the defence that if we do turn it over, well, we'll win the ball back.
Yeah. For me, I thought Fellaini stood out as one of the better performances. I mean, especially with the amount of pressure that they were putting on our defence and running it at our defenders, I thought that Fellaini just looked like an absolute rock in midfield. He made me feel comfortable and calm every time he had the ball. He didn't look stressed at all, under pressure at any time. And I think if he were to move, I think that is something that we might miss. I mean, obviously he has a great confidence in himself, and he is a gigantic man, so he can kind of afford to, just turn the back on attackers because they won't be able to get the ball off him, and his technique is, you know, unquestionable. So I thought he played really well. He was kind of our rock, and I think that game could have changed a lot if he wasn't playing.
Yeah, definitely. I guess I come to expect that from him, so you don't really take note. But yeah, definitely another really good performance from him. And yeah, I think we're going to miss him. If reports are right and it looks like he is on his way, you might think it's easy to replace him. But I think we'll find it'll take a little bit to find our feet without him. But if we can get in a couple of central midfielders and Gibson's fit again and it means Osman's not there, then you get a bit of a better pairing than what we've had with Fellaini and Osman if you kind of have a McCarthy and Gibson or a McCarthy and Barry or a Gibson and Barry. If those rumours are true, then it gives you, a lot better central midfield. And I guess on the defence, with those type of players, you're not going to get let down. It'll just be more, you'll be a bit more nervous with it than you are with Fellaini there, knowing how good he is and that he's so good at what he does.
Mm. So, three games, three draws. Where do you think we're at? Are you happy with where we're at? Do you think we deserve to be where we're at, or you think we should be in a bit more of an advanced position on the ladder?
Yeah, I think we should be on seven points from three. Instead we're on three, which is disappointing. I feel like the first game at Norwich, you take them because they got a couple of lucky goals. Then I felt the second game at West Brom, that was really 2 points dropped. And then last night, definitely, with the penalty, I can't help but feel that although they looked dangerous as well and I thought they played really well, I can't help but feel that that's 2 points dropped as well. So the first two draws, I was pretty happy with. If we had got the 3 points last night. The fact that it's another draw, it's a bit hard to swallow that for me, just because I know, and I will give Martin his time, because I can see that there are things that he's looking to bring in, and they are going to take a while. And until we get our squad settled as well, we won't know what we're going to go with. But definitely disappointed not to get the 3 points last night.
I mean, 3 games, 3 draws. I think we were lucky to get out of the first game with a draw, even though everyone should feel like we should have won that game. We were definitely the better team on the day, but having 2 goals scored against us, I think that's the best that we could have hoped for, was a draw. Personally, I don't think we deserved to really win that game at Cardiff last night. They didn't really create any clear-cut chances. I mean, the penalty was definitely there, so I guess on that side of it, we should feel a little bit sour that that wasn't given, because a goal makes all the difference in that game at the end of the day. That's the difference between a win and a loss. So I kind of agree with that, but just taking a long-term kind of approach, they looked a bit lackluster last night. I'm really happy with the way that they're playing at the moment and this new style that they're bringing in. It's very attractive, and I do like to see them hold the ball for long periods of time. But we're still really, really struggling to create that last entry onto goal. So even though we're only three points from 3 games, I think that it could have been worse. Just didn't think that we really stood out last night as the dominant team.
I think I agree with you there. It's just more that you look at the teams we've played. So if you told yourself at the start of the year, going into Norwich away, West Brom at home and Cardiff away, and got told that you were going to end up with 3 points in total from the 3 games, you can't help but feel that most Evertonians would have been disappointed. But I understand what you're saying, and I probably agree last night a little bit, but I just expected more energy last night in the performance.
Yeah, definitely. I think I would have expected them to play a lot better than they did. And I thought for a long periods of the game, we didn't look like we were going to get beat. But again, we just didn't have that final ball. That's the end of episode 1. We'll see you next time. Thanks.